media, was one of the first people subpoenaed by the committee last year. The committee says Scavino helped promote Trump's false claims of a stolen election and witnessed some of Trump's activities on the day of the attack. Navarro was subpoenaed over his promotion of false claims of voter fraud that the committee believes contributed to the attack. Only two Republicans, Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, both members of the investigative committee, voted for the charges. It's now up to the Justice Department to decide whether to prosecute the two men. A contempt of Congress charge carries a penalty of up to a year in jail and a maximum fine of $100,000. A bipartisan group of senators are planning to introduce a bill today that would prevent the Biden administration from lifting Title 42 until the end of the COVID-19 pandemic. Enacted as a temporary pandemic response measure by the Trump administration, Title 42 allows U.S. border officials to summarily expel migrants to Mexico or their native countries, bypassing laws that require the government to interview asylum seekers to ensure they won't face harm if deported. The bill calls on the Biden administration to delay ending Title 42 until 60 days after the Surgeon General submits written notification to Congress formally rescinding the COVID-19 public health emergency. The Biden administration must then submit a plan to Congress addressing any possible influx of migrants. The measure is expected to be proposed as an amendment to the latest COVID-19 relief package that Congress is debating. Republicans have said they will block the relief package until action is taken on Title 42. And Minnesota prosecutors declined to file charges on Wednesday against a Minneapolis police SWAT team officer who fatally shot Amir Locke while executing an early morning no-knock search warrant in February. Body camera video of the incident shows Locke appeared to be asleep on a couch when a SWAT team entered the apartment where he was staying. Locke reached for a handgun that he legally owned and was shot three times by white police officer Mark Hanneman, who opened fire less than 9 seconds into the raid. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey announced an immediate moratorium on no-knock warrants, and on Tuesday he formalized a new policy that will take effect Friday that requires officers to knock and wait before entering a residence. And in weather today, in Washington, D.C., it is 51 degrees and cloudy. In New York City, 47 degrees and cloudy. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. We have multiple themes on our program today. And first up, I'm going to do a reading of a letter by Dr. Robert Malone, MD and a scientist, the discoverer of the science and technology that led to the further development of the RNA vaccines. He is pro-vaccine. In fact, he's invented or worked on vaccines his entire career. So pro-vaccine that he took the COVID vaccines himself. So any statement that he is a anti-vaxxer or right-wing or a white supremacist, this is all nonsense. For his entire 30-plus year career, he has been at the top of the academic and medical hierarchy as far as respected influence, both in treating patients and in his developmental science background. So here's what he has to say. My name is Robert Malone, and I'm a U.S.-based physician and scientist. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. The simple truths are what matters most. Honest words spoken from the heart can change the world. We should not have politicized the public health response to SARS-2 and COVID-19. And Justin Trudeau should have focused on managing the actual ground truth of COVID-19 instead of following the script provided to him by the leadership of the World Economic Forum. I'm a physician and a scientist now, and I'm highly trained and experienced in developing vaccines and other medicines. But I've also been a carpenter, a farmhand, and I still work my farm. I drive a GMC Dually diesel flatbed, Kubota farm tractor, and can run a skid loader or drive a team of horses. I've shown my foals at the Rural Winter Fair. By the original meaning, I am a teamster. I come to you with an open heart, committed to healing and bringing three simple words: integrity, dignity, and community. These are the three simple words that ring like bells in the heart of honest people. In the actions of the governments of Ottawa and Canada, we are now able to clearly see the previously hidden face of the global fascist totalitarianism, by which I mean the fusion of the power of large corporations and the power of the state, as fascism has been defined by Mussolini. We are now seeing shocking signals of desperation from our globalist, corporatist opponents. The incompetence of the party of Davos is becoming plain for all of us to see. For the first time, we can clearly see that they are willing and able to collude with Silicon Valley to weaponize the banking system against us. Taking $10 million from a political fundraising campaign is something that most of us could not have imagined 2 years ago. Clearly, this has backfired because it's exposed to everyone that there is an unnatural coordination between government, the information technology sector, and the banks. And now we have direct video evidence of this collusion from the infamous Zoom call recording documenting the involvement of the government and mayor of Ottawa. There is also the issue of censorship. It is ramping up, and our opponents are no longer really trying to justify it. The attacks on Joe Rogan are truly a desperate act. The attack the most beloved media icon in North America has so much downside, again, shows they are coordinating. Did you know that Spotify and Moderna share the same number one investor, Bailey Gifford? Asset Management owns 11.5% of both companies. And now we know that Neil Young has a financial conflict of interest because of the large investment bank that owns about half of the financial rights for his song catalog. This strategy is backfiring. Joe Rogan is still strong, and the central pharmaceutical and banking system hated more than ever. It will take more than Neil Young to shut down Joe Rogan. But there is more. What we are now witnessing, according to this letter, is that they are so desperate, these conspirators, they now literally ask the U.S. Department of Defense to commit a felony, changing data in the Defense Medical Epidemiological Database. Stupidly, it had already been released and is now being studied by the medical community. They were caught with their pants down, changing data after the fact. My guess is that this deserves criminal investigation. This will also backfire because now people are personally exposed, and my guess will be run for the hills or become whistleblowers. I hear the lawyer, Thomas Rentz, is being inundated with new whistleblower actions and information releases. It's time to end the fake emergency powers, which have been used to suspend your constitutional and natural rights. There is no emergency treatment strategies for curing COVID using pre-purposed drugs were discovered by March 2020. Omicron is not a killer. The censorship must stop. Reading from the deeply academic book of Dr. Matthias Desmet, titled The Psychology of Totalitarianism, quote, "Alternative voices are stigmatized by a veritable ministry of truth, which is crowded with fact-checkers. Freedom of speech is curtailed by various forms of censorship and self-censorship. People's rights to self-determination is infringed upon by coercive vaccination strategies, which impose heretofore unthinkable social exclusion and segregation upon society," end quote. Turning now to integrity. human dignity, and the importance of community. Integrity is a commitment to truth in what you say, how you live, and how you treat others. St. Augustine, the doctor of the Roman Catholic Church, famously said, "The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose, it'll defend itself." Dignity flows from respect for ourselves, for each other, and for the world we live in. Community is what binds us together to each other and gives our lives purpose and meaning. Regarding the genetic COVID vaccines, the science is settled. They are not working to prevent infection, replication, and spread to others, and they are not completely safe. In our daily lives, with our friends, with our families, and with our coworkers, we all know this is true. They are not completely safe, and the full nature of the risks remain unknown. In contrast, the natural immunity which healthy immune systems develop after infection and recovery from COVID-19 is long-lasting. It is broad and highly protective from disease and death caused by this virus. Now we have Omicron. These vaccines were designed for the original Wuhan strain, a different virus. These vaccines do not prevent Omicron infection, viral replication, or spread to others. And there are data suggesting that they make the risk of infection and disease higher. These genetic vaccines are leaky, have poor durability. And even if every man, woman, and child in the United States and Canada were vaccinated, these products cannot achieve herd immunity and stop COVID. If there is risk, there must be choice. This is the fundamental bedrock truth of modern bioethics. All medical procedures and vaccines and drugs have risks. All of us have the right to understand those risks and to decide for ourselves whether we are willingly accepting those risks. To deny this is to deny human dignity. Evil has many roots. A willingness to deny human dignity is one of the largest. In our hearts, in our souls, we all know this is true. Now, regarding our children, although I am a physician who is deeply committed to the Hippocratic Oath, I am above all a husband, a father, and a grandfather. I ask that you allow me a moment to speak to you about our children and about our fundamental responsibility to protect them. If nothing else, we must nurture and protect our children. This is job one. It is your job. It is my job. It is not their job to protect us. And during the last 2 years, our society and our public health response has failed to protect them. Many things that our public health system has demanded we do to our children has directly harmed them. Self-harm, suicide, drug abuse in children have taken off all around the world. Anxiety, bullying, intimidation, coercion have become the norm. Measured IQ in the very young has dropped. Fundamental childhood delays are easily measured. And physical damage to children from injecting them with genetic vaccines in order to protect the elderly from a virus is occurring. As a parent, it is ultimately your responsibility to protect your children. If they are harmed by these genetic vaccines, you're the one that will be taken to task for this, and you will carry that burden for the rest of your life and theirs. On average, between 1 in 2,000 and 1 in 3,000 children that receive these vaccines will be hospitalized in the short term with vaccine-caused damage. Only with the passage of time will we know what long-term damage may occur. The vaccines do not protect our children from becoming infected with Omicron and do not prevent infection children from infecting others. In contrast, the pharmaceutical companies and the government are almost fully protected from any damage these products might cause to them. If your child is damaged by these vaccines, you'll be left alone with both your grief and the burden of care. These genetic vaccines can damage your children. They may damage their brain, their heart, their immune system, and their ability to have children in the future. And many of these types of damages cannot be repaired. So I beg you, please, get informed about the possible risks that your children may be damaged by these experimental vaccine products. Don't let anyone tell you what to do. Think for yourself, because it's your responsibility to protect and nurture them. If they are damaged, no regional authority, no government public health official, no television doctor will be there to help you. You, your family, and your child will have to carry the load yourselves. When I was still a child, a brilliant young American president said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Canada is your country. You own this amazing gift, but you must defend it if you wish to keep it, or the globalists will take it from you. They promise that in the future you will own nothing and you'll be happy. Do you believe them? Today I ask all of you to keep the words of President John F. Kennedy in your minds and hearts. We can all be leaders, and we can all have stepped up to the task. I want to thank you for your service to Canada and the world. We will survive this, and we will overcome these hardships if we can just keep these three simple words in our heart: integrity, dignity, and community. End quote, Dr. Robert Malone. I think that's very important that we keep those words in mind, and also to realize that Dr. Malone has taken a beating. There has been nonstop attacks against his character, his reputation, and his livelihood. Like many physicians and scientists over the age of 30, he probably has a nice savings and will be able to go forward. In time, he will be shown to have been on the right side of this issue, as many of you in this audience are also. It is no longer about the vaccine, whether it works or doesn't work. We were told, take your vaccines and get back to normal. Well, you took your vaccines, vast majority of Americans, and nothing has returned to normal. What we do have is new normals. We have massive amounts of injuries and deaths, and the injuries and deaths still to come. They have lied about the figures. They've lied about every part of this. And yet I'm here to explain that whatever you do, it's your right. I am for vaccines, providing that those vaccines are shown to be safe and effective by the scientific standards by which I, as a scientist, a senior research fellow for 33 years at the Institute of Applied Biology and continuing to this day, you cannot have a safe vaccine if there are thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed scientific literature under toxicology that the ingredients like aluminum and mercury and formaldehyde and polysorbate 80 and other ingredients are themselves toxic individually, let alone collectively. You cannot have a vaccine that's considered efficacious if at the same time you have not compared it with a placebo of a saline solution. Most of the vaccines throughout history have compared one vaccine with another. That is not a comparison. You take 5,000 children and give them your vaccine. You take 5,000 children equally matched in age and size and health, and you do not give them any vaccine. And after 3 years, you then do measurements of all their indices of the immune system and health and conditions they've suffered through or not. And then you know whether or not one is better than the other. And if you want to really do it right, you do a third. You give one group of children vitamin D3 and vitamin C, zinc and magnesium, and olive leaf extract and quercetin, and you give them on a daily basis, and you have them on a healthy diet, and you see that they exercise, and then compare that group with the other two groups. But we would never do that, because we would know the outcome, and they're not going to have any outcome that would limit their ability to promote their products. And just as an aside, if you want to know why have they not allowed ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, and at least 25 other FDA-approved off-label drugs, inexpensive and safe to be used. It's simple, because their application to the Food and Drug Administration showed that there were no other ways of treating COVID. And if there's no other ways, then they could get the temporary permitting of using whatever drugs or vaccines that they could. But we have drugs that have been used all around the world from the very beginning of this, and it's saved lives. The evidence is overwhelming, irrespective of those who try to deny its existence. We had the peer-reviewed journals, the hundreds of peer-reviewed journals on ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and other elements that work. So you see, if it was shown that these work, then they would not have been able to get their emergency use authorization. So it was a ploy to maintain financial control and the narrative. Those are my thoughts. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go to a medical doctor in Houston, Texas. Now, she's giving a little press conference, so the audio is not as good as if she were in a studio, but you can understand what she's saying. And why am I bringing her on the program? Because she's a very orthodox doctor. In the normal course of my communicating with people, there wouldn't be a real reason to bring her on to talk about her medical practice. She prides herself in her orthodoxy. She's pro-vaccine, pro the medicines. Okay. But now that she has treated the patients, over 2,000 patients, outpatients, none died, all recovered, then what would happen if CBS's major news program, or ABC, 2020, 60 Minutes, Nightline, Dateline, what if all of them had her on with her patients, showing that these were patients, had they not been treated by her, would have ended up sick in a hospital or dead? But they didn't. So what was her reward? She has been attacked. She's been attacked in feature stories in the Houston newspapers. She's been attacked by the state medical boards, by the hospital. She's lost her privileges. So she is fighting back. And what's of interest is around her, you see all these white coats. These are mainly doctors and nurses who are there to support her. She had the courage. And what she's talking about is what it's like just to be a human being, what it's like to go through medical school, what it's like to train for 5 years in postgraduate education and then do your internships and then do all this other work and do it right for your entire career, never once be singled out for criticism until you found a different way to treat people instead of letting them stay at home, quarantine, until they're so sick they have to be rushed to the hospital. Now, that's just common sense and reason. That's just Occam's razor applied. But that's what they're doing to every single doctor in America. And we should be a forum for free speech. We should be a voice for the voiceless. We're going to take a short break, come back, and you're going to hear from her. It's about 8 or 9 minutes long. But we have a lot more coming also today that you're going to find interesting. Please stay with us.
Thank y'all so much for coming. Last time I was here, I think I talked about my boys. I just want y'all to know that they are all here today, and they are very protective, and they don't fight fair, so keep it nice. And before I begin, I want to start by expressing my appreciation for all of y'all coming today, all of my patients. Your kind words, your letters, your messages have meant so much to me. To my awesome employees.
Yeah.
Somehow have stood by me and not quit during all this. And I've been lucky enough to bring on two awesome new nurses. I've got Jennifer Bridges here. Medical Clinic of Houston. And both of those nurses, as you know, have exercised their right not to let other people decide what gets injected into their bodies.
That's right.
I also want to thank the people around the world that I've never met who have reached out with nice messages and kind words and have drowned out all the other people who are trying to take me down. I want to thank my attorney, Steve Mippy, who's coming out right now, for helping me navigate all this craziness. And my publicist, Wayne Dolcefino, for also helping me stand up against all the media outrage. So 2 months ago in November, Houston Methodist launched me into the public spotlight by telling the world that they were suspending my privileges for supposedly spreading dangerous misinformation about COVID. Houston Chronicle joined in that effort. And since then, I've had a lot of people publicly comment that I should lose my license. These people don't know me, they're strangers. One of the people in particular, Ariana Garcia, is a journalist for the Houston Chronicle. And 3 days ago, she published a story and titled it, "Former Houston Methodist Doctor Still Has Her License Despite Continuing to Spread COVID-19 Misinformation."
Shame on her.
Shame.
Shame,
shame
on her.
Her.
Ariana does not know me.
Yeah,
Ariana does not know me. She never bothered to ask me to comment on this article before she published it. And neither do any of the other people who have called for my license to be removed. So I want to tell y'all what it takes to get into this spot right here. And it's not an easy journey. It's not easy to get a medical license. My path took 13 years of higher education. I had to make straight A's. Residency was the 5 hardest years of my life, mentally, physically, emotionally. But I did learn a lot, and one of my most valuable lessons was to take a critical view of pharmaceutical companies and not be the first person to prescribe the newest and latest drug until it has stood the test of time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that has served me well when looking at COVID-19 and how we're treating it. Also, one of my favorite attendees at Stanford, he told me that we need to be wary of any new vaccines that come out and not to follow the herd, to take things with a critical view. I also learned about the culture of these big academic institutions. And they're rigid, they're hierarchical, and they breed conformity. And I knew that after residency, that was not the kind of practice I wanted to be surrounded in.
Thank God.
So, in the following years, I had kids, and that experience gave me a different perspective on the doctor-patient relationship. I had 4 boys in 5 years. So I was basically, I was a patient for 5 years straight. And that was eye-opening. I learned what a inefficient, impersonal, confusing healthcare system we have. And when I started this clinic, I was determined to do things differently. I have no financial ties with any third parties. I do not contract with insurance companies. I don't contract with the government. I do not take Medicare. I have no financial ties with hospitals and no financial ties with pharmaceutical companies. The only people I work for are my patients, and I treat them the way I would want to be treated.
Thank you.
I'm also a strong believer in transparency, and I list all my prices on my website, and I list all my clinical data on my website. My ENT and sleep medicine practice morphed into this COVID center in response to my patients' needs and wants. In the last 6 months even, I have treated over 2,000 people successfully as outpatients for COVID. And I want you I think we all know that early COVID treatment works. saves lives. And I'm not going to be silenced, intimidated, or bullied by Houston Methodist, Houston Chronicle, or anyone else who wants to target positions that question the narrative. Medical freedom has been hijacked by hospitals, big pharma, insurance companies, and the federal agencies. Doctors, this is our time. We need to stand up and save our profession. And patients, ask yourself, do you want doctors that respect your right to informed consent and respect your right to try? Or do you want those that follow the dictates of hospitals, insurance companies, and federal agencies?
No.
Media companies and the bullying of physicians that don't follow the narrative, and hospitals and governments that are unwilling to share important data about the vaccines and about COVID treatments have bred mistrust amongst the public.
Yes.
Methodist Hospital is part of this problem. They have chosen secrecy over transparency. They have listed on their website two of their key core values are integrity and accountability, yet they won't share their data with us. The Freedom of Information Act and the Texas Business Code require nonprofits at Methodist Hospital to reveal their data. I have made formal requests and received nothing. But we have lots of questions. We want to know, of all the million plus people that you have vaccinated, how many of those have had an adverse reaction? And what are they?
Yes.
It's the
yes.
highest number ever.
Right.
Why is a child
too
asking these questions?
Exactly. And then of all the people who have recently been admitted with COVID, how many of those people are fully vaccinated? How many of your fully vaccinated employees are having breakthrough cases? And of the 2,879 patients that have died in your hospitals, how many of them were refused early treatment?
Yes. Yes.
Financially, we have a lot of questions. In 2019, Methodist Hospital reported over $4 billion in assets. This was before COVID. Let's see what they've done since COVID. How much have your executives profited from the COVID windfall? Do you have any financial relationships with the vaccine companies? How much are you making from the vaccines? How much have you been rewarded by giving remdesivir? And what have your complications been from giving remdesivir?
Just your pills.
Because they have not responded to my request for information, I decided to take legal action against Methodist. And I want to make this clear, I'm not seeking any financial gains from this or personal gain. I'm simply seeking the truth, which we all deserve.
And that was Mary Talley Bowden, B-O-W-D-E-N, a board-certified physician in two specializations, including sleep medicine. Down in Houston, Texas, treated over 2,000 patients successfully with COVID-19. And she's an advocate for something simple, healthcare transparency, empowering patients and their providers. And for that, well, this is a modern-day medical McCarthyism. Now we're going to go to Thomas Renz, R-E-N-Z. He's an attorney. He is the lead attorney in several major cases brought in Ohio, New Mexico, Maine, and nationally against the CDC, the Department of Health and Human Services, regarding COVID-19 lockdowns, mask mandates, business closures, false PCR data, fraudulent death numbers, and more. And this is an interesting discussion. So at least you'll know that, okay, a doctor's, you know, saying, gee whiz, I'm going to fight back. But who are the people fighting back? Well, Robert F. Kennedy's fighting back, and there are many other lawyers. There are hundreds of lawyers fighting back. Here's one of the lead ones, so you have some idea of their success or failures. Bringing a lawsuit is not the same as having it sustained and winning it. But he is making progress. And in the near future, we'll have him on after some of these cases have evolved and won't be thrown out, so we can see his strategy and hear his stories and his evidence. Now to Thomas Rentz.
Tom, welcome back to the Spotlight.
Hey, thank you so much for having me again, Dave. I love coming on this show.
Hey, thanks for coming back. And I think the last time you were on was about 6 months ago, which was quite a while ago. I mean, that's a long time. And a lot's changed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I saw you with Ron Johnson. You were one of the people there presenting evidence in regards to the vaccine, the Department of Defense, and you had a couple of whistleblowers. I just wanted to bring people up to date. What did you find there? What did the whistleblowers tell you? And what information now is going to be used against the vaccine manufacturers, Big Pharma?
Yeah, so what we have is we had a group of military professionals. These guys are senior military. They're doctors, public health. I mean, you know, very, very good, high quality people. And each of them, for their own various reasons, started looking into this. You know, a lot of it was just because, you know, they kept seeing people getting sick. One of them, you know, his Green Beret, was shot in duty, you know, rescuing someone. You know, he actually had a real bad reaction to the vaccine. He's injured from it. And so these guys, you know, they started looking into this, and what they found was horrifying. And what we testified to is we said, you know, we look at this and we're looking at these DOD numbers, and they're showing, you know, 300-400% increases in all these different things, cancers and infertility and miscarriages and you name it, and you know, even 1,000+ increase over average on things like, you know, diseases of the nervous system and things like that. So the numbers were terrifying. It shows an epidemic of disease and all these issues occurring in the military, and the only thing that had changed was the introduction of the vaccine. Everything else was the same. So yeah, we testified to the senator about that.
So with the information that you have now, with, I guess there's a special database that they keep track of everything?
Yeah. So the defense medical records are considered the best and most complete in the world because, you know, if you're in the military, you go to the doctor and it's a military doctor and they keep good records and they've got everything there. So the defense military medical records are kept on a database called DMSS. It's the Defense Medical Surveillance System. That database has everything, including names and stuff like that. Well, they don't want, you know, if you're going to study what's going on with the military as a healthcare unit, which a lot of people do, it's a very, very important group to study because these records are so good. So if you want to do that, they don't want to give out everybody's name and private information. So they created another database, and it's called DMED. And that's the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database. And all DMED does is anonymizes the medical records of military people and then makes it easy to sort through. So it's a counting program. So they queried DMED, and they found all these things. And DMED has historically been considered one of the most spot on the best data sources for medicine anywhere, and it is frequently cited in peer-reviewed journals. You know, people love to go to it for data. So there's you know, tons of articles out there in peer-reviewed and scientific literature talking about data that they've pulled from DMED because it's such good data.
So does the CDC or the FDA, do they keep a database of information or they don't at all?
Well, they do, but so they have multiple databases. When we talk about the vaccine and vaccine injuries, they've let it slip. There's a number of different places that they're getting this data from. So they're monitoring for safety and injuries. They're just lying about it. They're claiming they're not seeing any injuries, but they're lying. And this is a great example of it because we know we have documents that show that the Fauci's crew is watching these DOD databases.
So wait, Fauci is they're watching the DOD databases. They're watching that information.
Absolutely. This stuff has been reported to Fauci's crew. So they've been watching this. We know they watch it. It's been reported to the ACIP meetings. So these people who are consistently approving this for younger and younger people and are poisoning our children right now, they're aware of how many injuries and deaths and things are happening in the military, along with, you know, I've reported in the past whistleblower data from Medicare, Medicaid. I've reported, you know, all these other databases that they're watching. And they claim they don't, you know, there's no evidence of anybody being sick, but I've got their data. They're outright lying. There's no question about it. And they are aware because we have other documents that show, as presented in ACIP, as presented to the FDA, you know, so on and so forth.
So, I mean, from what I'm getting from what you're saying, they knowingly know that the vaccines will hurt people from that data.
There's zero question that they are aware of the injuries and deaths and that they are covering it up. And interestingly enough, Dave, I don't know if you saw this, but after we did our testimony, a few days later, instead of responding to the senator or to us, a spokesman for somewhere in defense responded to PolitiFact because they knew that PolitiFact wouldn't answer any questions and would just parrot whatever they say and says, oh, there's a glitch. Did you see that?
No, I did not. What was the glitch?
Oh my God, this is so we now are in the cover-up stage, and let me give you evidence on that.
Okay.
So check this out, Dave. They said, well, the data for 2021 is correct, but the data for 2016 through 2020 was incorrect and that there were lots more injuries. So let me explain how that works. So mind you, the data for 2016 through 2020 has been cited in countless peer-reviewed articles by countless public health professionals around the universe that have accessed this data and used it for research purposes. It's all over the place, right? None of these public health officials apparently noticed that this data was wrong. Right. The DOD would have us believe that none of these experts citing this data noticed it was wrong. They also want us to believe that the data was not only wrong, but it was wrong by a factor of 10. So let me explain that to you. Our data showed, and I'm looking at it right now, that's why I'm looking off. The data showed an average of around 2 million ICD codes per year from 2016 to 2020. And what an ICD code means is it's a diagnosis code.
Okay.
So on an average year in our military, they're young, they're healthy, they're fit. You're seeing about 2 million ICD codes. All of the public health professionals, including the CDC, have been watching that for years. No one thought there were any issues with it. Everybody thought it was fine. It's been cited in all sorts of peer-reviewed journals. Everybody was fine with that. Then, in 2021, the ICD count went up to 21 million. Okay? The only thing that changed was the vaccine. Now, mind you, 2020 was the year of COVID, so it wasn't COVID because we didn't see an increase, which makes sense because COVID doesn't hit young, healthy people.
Right.
So that makes total sense. The Defense Department has said we were off by 20 million ICD codes per year, and no one noticed. 20 million. Their new data that they're suggesting is true is showing about 22 million ICD codes per year from 2016 to 2020. So they would have us believe that all of these doctors and scientists and public health experts who've been looking at this, including the CDC, for since 2016, no one noticed that they were off by 20 million per year from 2 million to 20 million. I mean, that's just mind-blowing. And then, if that's not enough, because, I mean, you might think that's enough, but no, there's more. Not only that, but they claim, remember they said that 2021 was correct, right?
Right.
Apparently, they didn't notice that the database was wrong from 2016 till 2020 until right after we did the whistleblower testimony. Suddenly, they found that it was wrong, and guess what? Luckily, this database that was wrong, according to them, from 2016 to 2020, magically fixed itself for 2021, even though they didn't know there was an error. So, I mean, it's so mind-blowing that they would even sort of take this position. I just, it's unfathomable. The cover-up, the fraud, the malfeasance. I just want to go out there on record and tell any of you soldiers that are just following orders and covering this up, you know, that didn't work out real well at the end of World War II. I was just following orders. So you might want to think about that.
I agree with that. I mean, it feels like we're in the cover-up stage now. Do you feel that way? That they're trying to
cut?
Just saying, because look at all the states saying, okay, we're going to get rid of mask mandates. We're not going to push the vaccine path. It feels like they're backtracking on everything now.
Well, you may notice, I think it's very interesting, the timing that all happened in this election year right after that whistleblower testimony. I'm sure that's a coincidence. I'm going to tell you what I really think, Dave. I think this is, they know we've got the smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got this, I got a lot of channels at this point. I got more whistleblowers and intel coming in than I know what to do with. And I'm going to